Very much. So I've got the enviable or unenviable task of trying to follow three excellent speakers. And what I want to try and do is to draw a few strands from what's been said in order to provoke some discussion and to set some questions that I think it would be really interesting to hear views on from the floor, but also to inject a few sort of facts and bits of information from the research councils, because I think that that might be helpful as well in response to some of the challenges that have been made. So starting with Peter's really excellent views on the Haldane principle as a kaleidoscope or a bricolage, all those fragments. I think it's worth us thinking about the actual exact title of today's debate, which is it fit for the 21st century? So I think, again, to be sort of biblical in the way that David was being, there's that phrase, by their fruits ye shall know them. We know the strength of UK science. We know the strength of the university sector, what fantastic assets we've got. And one conclusion we can come to is this has been working really well over the last century. But I think a question for debate today is this going to serve us into the future? So that's one thing that I'd like to set up for discussion. Then moving on to Martin Rees's presentation, I thought what was really interesting there was to bring up this issue about the universities as a system and to be thinking about the value of responsive research mode. So that idea that we need to some sense, trust our scholars to really invest their own lives in those questions that are tractable and are going to have interesting results. And I'm reminded of a remark that was made by Craig Culhoun in his lecture last October, when he was being a little bit mischievous about impact in the same way that Peter Hennessy was. But he said to the assembled audience, mainly of academics, if you think about it, probably the main impact you will have is not in your scientific papers, it is on those people you teach within the universities. And he was making the point of how many excellent people don't carry on into academic or scientific careers broadly, but really contribute to society. So I think there's a slight danger when we think about the Haldane principle that we start thinking about research as if it is to produce a tangible product and not about the process of scholarship and about how that feeds into enriching the next generation. And so thinking about, you know, our dual support system and the entirety of the system and universities as really vibrant communities, not just as producers of research products, I think is really important. It'd be good to talk more about that. Then in both Martin Rees and David's presentation, there's been discussion of the nurse review, the value of having some advisory body. And I think that's something it would be very good to have people's views on from the floor. I've heard it said the problem with any advisory body is if it doesn't actually have a budget, it starts to just become a talking shop. So some of the models that are being discussed as part of the nurse review is whether you have some broader body that includes the research councils as well as other people to act as advisors and external people. But to sort of highlight a practical issue here and to remind people that, of course, each of the research councils is itself a council. And I've been really impressed by the calibre of people on our own Economic and Social Research Council, by no means all scientists, academics, you know, with really good input from people from a wide range of different backgrounds. So you have that issue if you start to think about a broader advisory board, how that fits with the existing governance structures of each individual research council. Now, I said I would inject a few facts and figures from the research councils. I really liked Peter Hennessy's metaphor or simile of the comfort blanket or sleeping bag of excellence. And, you know, one way of putting it would be to say the trouble is that with flat cash funding, that sleeping bag is quite small, and there's an awful lot of excellent people who want to get into it. So just looking at our own figures that I was reviewing yesterday, in terms of our applications to Economic and Social Research Council under the open sort of responsive mode, there were 420 applications last year, and we were only able to make 53 awards, so 53 out of 420. Now, you might say, well, probably the rest of them weren't very good, but when you actually look at the ones that scored 7 or more out of 10, then we're only able to fund around 32% of those. If you look at a very different research council, EPSRC, slightly different way of looking at the figures, but if you use the ref results, you would suggest that there's probably about 10,000 really excellent academics that could be being funded by EPSRC. They're only able to afford around funding for around 6,000 of them. So, yes, excellence is great, but we do have to think about, you know, where we prioritise, given that we can't fund all of that excellent research. And a sort of final practical point before closing is this: the issue about the age of applicants and PIs. And within ESRC, we were aware of that. And in fact, the academic community wanted to make a big campaign for us bringing back our small grants. They really liked the small grants and said that these were excellent for junior researchers, early career researchers. When we looked at the average age of standard grants of the PIs, it was 51. When we looked at the average age of PIs on the small grants, it was also 51. But testament to my predecessor, Paul Boyle, who's in the audience, we did then try to be innovative. And this is where, you know, discussion with council can help. And so we now have a transformative research grant scheme. And universities are only allowed to put in one or maybe two applicants. And we found that that works really well. We have a different peer review system. It's still peer reviewed, but we have a pitch to peers. And that has resulted in greater diversity of funding, and also we've looked at the age profile and we find more younger people are being successful under that scheme. So we are doing some practical things to try and address some of those problems. But just to sort of finish with, and I think this really takes up some of the points that David Willetts was making, and I think this is where the debate gets really difficult, that we can all agree on one hand that politicians should not be involved in awarding individual grants. They shouldn't be saying that Dr. Smith rather than Dr. Brown gets the funding. On the other side, we can really sympathise and agree with the view that some of these very large capital projects, ones that need international negotiation, really do need the political, ministerial backing behind them and input. But the problem that we can never quite agree on is this grey area in the middle. And so I think that's where we probably need to have further debate this evening. So I'll end it there. Thank you.